And welcome to the Morning Exchange on Voice Corps. My name is Annette Lutz. I'm with the National Federation of the Blind of Ohio, and I'm so happy all of you are able to join us on what is a surprisingly warm day here in Columbus, Ohio. I don't know. It looks like we jumped right over spring and jumped right into summer. I think they're telling us we're going to have a high of 85 degrees today in April. That is something. And I know all of you are hopefully scurrying around and finishing your taxes or already have them done. I hate to bring you down and say it's tax day, but yeah, it is. So I'm glad you're taking an opportunity to listen to us this morning and maybe forget about those taxes for an hour or so. And I'm glad we're going to have the opportunity to help you with that. As always, we have lots going on in the National Federation of the Blind. Of course, we are getting ready for our national convention in Austin, which will be this upcoming July 3rd to the 8th. Love all of you to be able to join us if you could. That would be wonderful. But if you can't come to Austin, remember we have the virtual experience that you can take part in right there from your own homes. Just go to nfb.org/convention, and all the information you need about the convention will be right there. We'll be talking about it, I'm sure, some more in the upcoming shows, even before and after. I'm excited to be going this year. I can't wait to come back and share my experience with all of you. And love you to share it with us as well. So hopefully you can attend, whether in person or virtually. We'd love to have you. And of course, we're getting ready then later on this year, just to kind of keep it in mind. It's still a little ways off, but it'll get here before we know it, as everything always does. Our state convention, which will be November 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th in Dayton, Ohio. New place for us this year. We're going to be at the Marriott University Hotel there in Dayton, and would love to have you join us there. If you can't make it to Austin for national, maybe you can come and join us at the state. It's a little more intimate, a little smaller, but none less important. We love getting the work done at the Federation at all levels. So we'd love to have you there, and I know we'll be talking about that more as we get closer. And one other item before I introduce our guest today, I would like to invite you to a seminar that is being hosted by our affiliate vice president, Suzanne Turner, on this upcoming Tuesday, April 21st at 7 p.m. on our Ohio Zoom room. It is called Blind Confidence. And I've been honored to be asked to be a panelist on this, along with three other Ohio Federationists, William Turner, Jessica Stover, and Delsenia Brown. And we're going to talk about being confident as blind people in all situations. I know Suzanne is very good at putting these together. She's done other seminars like this in the past, and I know it'll be very interesting. Whether I'm on there or not, it'll be interesting with the others I know who will do a wonderful job, and I hope you can join us. You can contact anything that is in our Zoom room in Ohio by calling any Zoom number, and the code for all Ohio Zoom activities is 408-185-0851. That's the big code you need to get into anything that we do in our Ohio Zoom room. And I'll try to repeat that later in the show. So, getting ready for convention and all this, we stay really busy and we're busy year-round. And those of you who read the Braille Monitor, which is our flagship publication, know just how busy the National Federation of the Blind is and all the different things we have our hands in. Well, the Braille Monitor itself is a task, and it is put together every month by its editor, Chris Danielson, who is fairly new to that job. And Chris has been on here a couple times before, but it's been a while. But since he's been new in the job of editor of the Monitor, I would wanted to have him come back and tell us all about that. And so we're so fortunate today to have Chris Danielson with us. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Annette. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
Oh, I'm so happy you are. So before we get into talking about the Braille Monitor and all the myriad of things you have to do to put together the magazine that we all like to read every month, let us tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get to this place in the Federation?
Well, it's I'll try to tell the condensed version, I guess. But I have been a member of the Federation for, I hate to say it, but it is closer to 40 years than 30 years now.
Okay.
I learned about the Federation when I was in high school or had just graduated from high school. And I was involved in my home state of South Carolina for a while, but I didn't really get super involved until I won one of our national scholarships in 1991. And that meant, of course, that I traveled to New Orleans, which was where our convention was in 1991, and participated in the convention. And I know that listeners in the Federation hear this all the time, but it really is true. Convention changed my life. I had never seen so many blind people. I had never met so many blind people that were succeeding in fields that I had not thought it possible for blind people to succeed in. I had never met so many blind people who were so much better at some blindness skills than I was, like cane travel and so forth. So it was a really awakening experience for me. And one of the things that happened at the convention was that I was encouraged by Joanne Wilson to consider receiving training at the Louisiana Center for the Blind, which is, of course, one of our training centers. So I didn't do that right away, but by the next summer, I had decided to do it. And the reason I had decided to do it is because I had considered participating in an internship through my political science program at Furman University, but that internship would have been in Washington, D.C., and I realized that I simply did not have the skills, or maybe I had the skills, but I certainly didn't have the confidence in the skills to be sure that I would be successful at handling an internship in Washington, D.C. So instead, I went to the Louisiana Center for the Blind. And I went there for 6 months, and it was a life-changing program. And in retrospect, I probably graduated a little bit earlier than I needed to. I could have benefited from even more time there, another 3 months maybe, but I got enough training that it made a significant change in my confidence as a blind person. And so then I went back to South Carolina and I went to law school and I started a legal career, which obviously is a career path that I've deviated from now. In 2003, I had decided that I was not enamored of the legal career like I thought that I would be. And I was looking for other work to do. And I happened to let Donald C. Capps, who was then the president of the National Federation of the Blind of South Carolina, know that I was looking for other opportunities. He in turn let Dr. Mark Maurer know And Dr. Maurer then contacted me and talked to me about whether I would be interested in coming and working for the National Federation of the Blind at the national headquarters in Baltimore. And so I accepted a job then to come to Baltimore. And I came to Baltimore. I love Baltimore. It's a very unique city. I've really enjoyed living here. And I did various things, including some editing. And then I sort of settled into a public relations role, first as assistant to John Perret, who was then our director of public relations. Now, of course, he's our executive director for advocacy and policy. And John was really, and is still really a terrific mentor and a great person. And he's somebody that Federationists should also get to know if they can. But then I became director of public relations, and I did that until a couple of years, well, last year. At the beginning of last year is when I assumed the role as editor of the Braille Monitor. Now, I had President Riccobono and I had talked about me becoming editor of the Braille Monitor before that time, and he always t says that it took some convincing, and it kind of did. I knew I had the skills for it, but I wondered if that was really what I wanted to do because I did like the job that I was doing at the time. But ultimately, I decided that it was a good fit for me, and I spent a couple of years learning from my predecessor, Gary Wunder, who is a great friend, one of my closest friends, and a wonderful human being, really, really great human being and mentor of the many that I've had in the Federation, Gary. And so Gary taught me the ropes of editing the Braille Monitor. And then I was ready to launch into my own editorship at the beginning of 2025. So that's how I came to be where I am.
Absolutely. Well, wonderful. And yes, Gary did a fabulous job doing this for quite a long time. I started reading the Braille Monitor under his editorship, if is that a word? And
If it's a word now, we've made it a word.
it is now, yes. And still enjoy it with you today. Tell us a little bit for those who are listening who may not know, what is the Braille Monitor and how can people get a hold of it?
So the Braille Monitor is the flagship magazine of the National Federation of the Blind. We have published a magazine for most of our history, and the monthly magazine that we publish, or actually it's 11 times a year, and I'll explain why that is in a minute. But we started publishing it as the Braille Monitor. It had a different name before then, but we started publishing it as the Braille Monitor in 1957. And pretty much since that time, it has been published on more or less a monthly basis. There have been times when it went on hiatus or whatever for a short time, for various reasons, but it's pretty much been continuous since that time. I remember reading it when I got started in the Federation, when I was a scholarship applicant. They would send us various materials, and one of them was a cassette copy of the latest Braille Monitor. So I remember reading it back at that time. And so it's been around for a long time. It is our official magazine. It is available in a lot of ways. Being the Braille Monitor, it is available in Braille. And so we send hard copy Braille copies of it out each month. It's usually two, soft magazine style braille volumes, sometimes shorter, sometimes a little bit longer. We used to also send an audio version out of it on cassette. We don't use cassettes anymore. Some of your younger listeners may not even know what a cassette
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
But we now send it out for people who need it mailed to them. We send it on a thumb drive, which is just a little flash, also called a flash memory drive or a flash drive. And these can fit into a lot of devices, but in particular, they can fit into the digital talking book players that you get from the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Print Disabled. That's how retro I am. I keep remembering its old name. But now it's for the blind and print disabled, which I really think is a better descriptor for it.
Yes.
And it's a wonderful service. I've used it all my life. And their players, both the old one and the new one, the older digital player and the newest one, can accept a thumb drive of the Braille monitor. And then you read it just like you would any other book. Now, if you are a little more up to date with your technology, you can also subscribe to it as a podcast. So if you look for National Federation of the Blind in your preferred podcast client, you will find all of our podcasts. There are four of them now, four separate ones. And they have different purposes, but so there's a presidential release, there's a Braille monitor, there's Walking Alone and Marching Together, there's Nations Blind, and there's Access On. So there's five of them now. But the Braille monitor is one, and then you get the complete issue of the Braille monitor as an audio podcast every month. You can do it that way. It's also available on NFB Newsline if you have access to that service, and it's available on our website. And it is also available in large print, I should say as well. So if you can read large print and you want a hard copy in that format, you can get that as well. And you can get, the subscriptions that are mailed to you, you can get set up for those by sending an email to subscriptions@nfb.org, or you can call our main number, which is 410-659-9314. There's a prompt from the main menu where you can go to update to start or update your monitor subscription information so that we have the latest information. And obviously what we need from you is we need your name and your address. It's also helpful to have a phone number and email address in case we need to get in touch with you. And then you will receive the Braille monitor. We send out both print and Braille versions and the thumb drive audio versions, free matter for the blind, every month. The Braille versions are actually sent directly from our Braille contractor, and the same with the print versions. And so you should get them in a relatively timely manner. We try to have each issue of the Braille monitor ready to go out on the first of each month, if not before. And the Braille transcription takes a little bit of time sometimes, so it may go out a little after the first of the month, but you will get it. And we just started working again with a new Braille contractor in January, and I've been really pleased with their promptness in getting the Braille monitor to our readers. So
one other way, I know you will email it. That's how I always get it, and I love how it's set up. If you don't read the whole email, each article has its own link. So if you don't read the whole thing at once, which who has time to sit and hold read the entire thing in one sitting, you can just pick the articles that you know that you go through them. And I really like reading it that way. It's not one big email that you have to scan through then and find where you left off.
So. Right. We have it. We have both a plain text and the email that you're describing as well with the links. We like to thank you for not letting me forget about email.
That's okay.
Because that's an important way to receive it as well. So there's lots of ways that you can access this content. And to find out all about them, actually, you can go to nfb.org/braille-monitor. And one of the things that you can do there, which we launched last year, the middle of last year, and which I'm really excited about, is you can see our early access content. We have started posting some content even before the hard copy versions of the audio version of the magazine are available. And that content is always on our nfb.org/braille-monitor page. And so you can get a sneak peek, and sometimes you get exclusive content, and we're looking forward to continuing to ramp that up. So that's another way that we, and from that same page, of course, you can access all of the online issues. And I should say also that the Braille Monitor is available in Spanish. So we do both English and Spanish versions of the Braille Monitor.
Oh, very cool. I did not know that about the pre-access. I'm going to look that up. that's great.
Yeah, I need to get back on the stick with that. We haven't updated it in a while, but I have some content that I'm going to post there soon.
All right. Looking forward to it. So I'm sure putting together a magazine 11 times a year and all those different formats and everything and such great content that's in it is not easy to do. obviously, you have a full-time job doing this. We look forward to seeing it every month, but tell us a little bit about what happens behind the scenes to put an issue together.
So behind the scenes, what happens, and thank you for reminding me. So the reason it's 11 times a year is that we do a double issue after the convention. There is so much content after convention. It's one of the few times of the year that I don't have to worry about whether I'm going to not have, whether I'm going to have enough content for an issue. And there's so much of it that we, it takes a while to put it together, and then it's an extra large issue when it comes to the reader. So we do that as a double issue, as the August-September issue is the way we've been doing it lately. It has been the September-October issue in the past, you know, but basically for a long time we've had the cadence of 11 times a year. So. So what happens behind the scenes is that I, of course, am constantly receiving and curating content. And I do have to curate content because, unfortunately, and this is where your listeners can help, I don't get so many submissions that it's automatic that I have enough for every issue. So if you've been thinking about writing an article for the Monitor, and anybody can, but you haven't done it yet, please do. And, you know, if you think you're not the greatest writer, that's okay, too. If you have an idea for a Monitor article, you can send it to me, and I'll work with you to see how we can get that article written. Or if you have a suggestion, so-and-so told me a story that would make a really good article, then please shoot those ideas to me, and we'll talk before the end of the show about how you can get in touch with me. But really always hunting for content. I always feel like I'm sometimes I'm a little more ahead than others, but I always feel like I'm just ahead of the curve in terms of having content for each issue. Although I have to say, the May issue is stuffed. Stuffed, I
All
tell
right.
you, with things for you to read. The last couple of issues I feel like have been a little bit thinner, but still plenty of content. But I always try to have as much as I can, and of course, but I'm always looking for new content. So, but once I have and I review all the content and I start thinking about where will it fit? And there's a lot of factors that go into that. Sometimes it has to do with do we after convention, for example, even though we do a double issue, maybe not all the convention content that I would like to use can go in that August September issue. So I have that to draw from. I have some articles that people submit to me that are what I call evergreen articles, which means I could publish them at any time. These tend to be the stories that members have, the sort of more philosophical articles. But sometimes I have articles that are a lot more newsy, that have to do with things that are current issues in the blind community and that the Federation is dealing with. And so I have to prioritize those. So I start planning out where I'm going to use stuff. And I have a big folder of pending items. And really, so far I've been able to just keep track in my sometimes I'll put in a file name, that it would be good for a particular issue. And another thing I keep track of is, what are some of the special celebrations that are Federation celebrations, or there or that are federa you know celebrations that all of us enjoy, like and some of them are more common, like I published a really good article by Sean Calloway for Women's History Month. Even though it was written by a guy, it was about two blind women who are doing extraordinary work in their community, and so that was for Women's History Month. I publish, articles for, other celebrations as well. I've got two Mother's Day themed articles for the May issue. I think about things like that as well, and also, just what will fit for other various reasons throughout the year. And then I put an issue together. And when I put an issue together, what I do is I put all the articles that I want to put in an issue together, and I have colleagues that help me then basically collate the issue. The first thing they do is they go through and make sure that all of the articles, because remember, I get articles from multiple sources. And so they make sure that the articles are in a consistent format, so that they're all going to appear relatively similar in the layout of the issue. So we do that, and then I decide what order I want them to be in. And then one of my colleagues, and I do that by going into the folder that we have for each month's issue and numbering the articles. So that tells one of my colleagues, and it, I have a particular colleague, but it can change. But that tells one of my colleagues. It's usually a team of two or three of us, or it winds up being five of us that work on each issue of the Monitor. I do the bulk of the work, but I have two proofreaders, and I have our art director that lays out the issue, and I have the people that help me with the logistics that I'm talking of now, which is just arranging the issue, building the table of contents based on the order that I've wanted to put articles in, making sure that that's all set up. And then once we have an issue built as a Word document, we send it to the first proofreader. They then make changes, and I go over those changes with them, usually on a phone call. And it comes back, and then our art director lays it out with the photos and everything, because we do, it is a magazine for blind people, but we do include photos. And of course, we include descriptions of all of those photos. And then we send the laid out version for a second round of proofreading, so that we make sure that we didn't miss anything, and also that nothing has been introduced in the layout that that needs to be proofread, because sometimes there are proofreading things that we need to fix in photo captions or things like that. And then once it comes back from that second proofing, our art director does final layout. And then at that time, we send the final layout versions. We send one as a PDF to our large print contractor, who then prints it up in magazine format and sends it out. And then we send another Word document that is formatted for Braille to our Braille contractor. And the Braille contractor then assigns it to a transcriber to do all of the extra things that Braille transcribers do, you know, add the special symbols page, do the Braille table of contents, all of those things. And then they send it to their production floor. They send that transcribed file to their production floor to actually emboss the Braille issues. And then we, and then those are sent out from that Braille contractor.
Wow, lots of work involved.
Yes.
Not an easy process, but it looks so simple because it always comes when it right when it's supposed to. And, you know, like everything behind the scenes is a lot more involved than most of us on the outside can get a feel for. So
yeah, and it sounds complicated and hard, but it's you know, for those of us involved in it, it's a familiar process. And so like I said, really the hardest part of it is getting and arranging the content and planning the content of each issue. And that is one of my main functions as the editor. The other is, of course, to actually edit the articles. And basically, I think of that job as, you know, sometimes it's more involved than others, depending on the strength of the written material I've received, or whether it started as written material or not, or started in some other format like a podcast, and then I have to edit the transcript. But for a lot of writers, it's just a matter of helping them look and sound their best, you know, making sure they didn't make any obvious grammar errors or anything like that. But also sometimes helping them to express something a little bit more clearly, or, you know, help them structure the article in a way that is going to make it easier on the reader. And so all of those things are things I do. So all of the planning, all of the editing, and then of course laying out the issue. And then those logistic pieces, I'm thankful to have my team members, and I'll call them out real quick who the current people are. My colleagues, Danielle Williams and Elise Bryan, have been helping me with the building of each issue. And our wonderful art director, Suzanne Schillwachter, is, I still have trouble with her last name. She got married to a guy with a difficult last name, and we always tease her about it. But Suzanne's wonderful. She does a lot of the other artwork for the Federation as well. But she lays out the Braille monitor. That's one of the big things she does, and she's wonderful. And also our two proofers, Joe Miller, who for a long time was on staff at the National Federation of the Blind, and now he still contracts with us to do proofing. And the same is true of Lorraine Rovig. A lot of people will remember Lorraine. She worked with us for many, many years, and she still helps me out by doing that second proofing of the Braille monitor.
Absolutely. So tell us, what kind of articles are you looking for? I know you're saying you're looking for content, and if people have something in mind, what types of things are you trying to find?
So I'm trying to find stories that give insight into the experiences that we have as blind people, stories about how people get involved in the Federation, insights that they have about the Federation. I want stories from affiliates and chapters about activities that they've done that have been successful. Stories from affiliates about activism that they've had to do, because of course we do plenty of national advocacy in the National Federation of the Blind, but we do a lot of activism and advocacy at the affiliate level as well. For example, I published a wonderful article by Linda Melendez about a tussle they had with the agency and the new governor there in New Jersey, and how they resolved that. And so that's in the latest issue, the April issue that you can read now. And I really want those kind of stories, because the thing about the monitor is it's our vehicle for all learning from each other. And there are plenty of Federation leaders who are newer or who can benefit from the experience of more experienced advocates. And it's also important for all of us to know what is going on throughout the country, because sometimes there are trends that emerge. You know, there have been a lot of challenges that our state voc rehab and blindness issue blindness agencies have faced because of the federal situation, and the federal funding situation, and what is going to happen with that, and do we really know what's going to happen with it, and all of that. There's this unfortunate lawsuit that some states are involved in that could affect Section 504. So we really try to cover all of these issues, and I'm just one gentleman, and I have a small team, and I can't cover all of them. So for all of those issues, all of the Federationist leaders or participants in advocacy throughout the country, there are reporters. I need for them to do some journalism, whether from a firsthand perspective or whatever, about what is going on in our movement. You know, we're all volunteers, and so it's another, you know, the monitor doesn't have a paid staff of reporters other than me. And of course I do write articles for the monitor as well, and do some reportage, as we call it, but I can't do everything, and I need my colleagues throughout the Federation to help me report on what is going on. And you know, I sometimes articles are very practical. Any tips and tricks that you've discovered as a blind person, or even as a person with multiple disabilities. I've got an article that I hope to publish soon that deals with, and I'm pretty confident I'll publish it, so I'll go ahead and preview it. It's about how you deal with if you are a blind person and you need to use a white cane, but also need to use a wheelchair. So any practical articles like that, technology tips or travel tips or just unique experiences that you've had as a blind person. One of my favorite articles that I've had the privilege to work on since I've been editor was an article by a young woman talking about her trip to Antarctica. Just any of those unique experiences, discrimination that you faced and how you dealt with it. And then we publish, obviously, the practical articles. My colleague, Jesse Shirick, our director of advocacy, writes one every year about the Social Security changes. And so we will take a lot of different things in the Braille Monitor, anything that will benefit our Federation community. You may have an idea for an article that I haven't even thought about. Just put it out there. And we'll see if we can use it. I still get enough submissions that I'm unfortunately not in the position where I can accept every single thing that I receive. But one thing that I would like to see more of is more articles and also just more letters, feedback about things that you've read in the Monitor. I would love to be able to, here I go, announcing this on the radio. I would love to be able to publish a regular letters column so that people can share what different articles that we've published have meant to them or even disagree with them. And that's one thing that I think is really important. The Monitor can be our forum for discussion. Even if something that you read in the Monitor is something that you strongly disagree with or that you have a different perspective about, as long as you can express yourself civilly and thoughtfully, then we're happy to consider it for the Braille Monitor. I would love to see us having more discussions in the Braille Monitor because I know that we don't always agree on everything. And that's fine as long as we can discuss our disagreements in the spirit of loving each other and caring about each other as Federationists.
Absolutely. You know, this does come up at times, but we're all individuals. So we're not always all going to agree on everything. But you're right. As long as we're civil, and then once, you know, like at a convention, once the majority has spoken, like in resolutions and things like that, we stick with our organization and know that the majority is what we're going to work with.
Right.
But we are all individuals. Everyone has their own opinions. I said, there's nobody that agrees with absolutely everything because that's just not how humans work.
You know, and if you, for example, need to rethink a policy that we have as the Federation and want to discuss that, that's fine. Donald Porterfield says that a great way to sort of do an initial test of your resolution idea is to write a Monitor article about it. So don't be afraid, be fearless in submitting Monitor articles. I want our publication to reflect all of our voices. To a certain extent, it is kind of the house organ of the Federation, but that doesn't mean that we have to, that everything that we publish is Federation dogma or policy. In fact, unless we say that it's policy and indicate that, for example, when we reprint the resolutions, it isn't necessarily.
Right.
So just because I've said something in the Monitor doesn't mean that it is laid down in stone. And we really need to use our publication to talk to each other because the discipline of writing an article sort of helps us all be more civil. I still think there's a role, and I think it can do a better job as being a forum, for example, than social media can. So I want to see us still having the discussions, and I think the Braille Monitor is a good way for us to do that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely. No comparison to social media where people, you know, print things on the fly. And
yeah.
It's not always the most civil and not always the most well thought out ideas like the monitor would be. I mean, it takes some time to sit down and write an article and to really think things through. And then it goes through your process. And
right.
all that. So it there's a lot to it. It's not just on the fly.
You know, we've all been in the position of being a keyboard warrior and then wishing we hadn't said what we'd said or hadn't said it in quite the way that we said it. And, you know, that's the advantage to submitting to the Braille monitor, because I'm your buffer. And I can come back to you and say, did you really want to take that tone or say that the way that you said it? You know, let's talk about this. Let's maybe, and I should say, by the way, that as editor, the author of the article always has final refusal. So if I edit an article and then the editor, the original writer doesn't like the way I edit it, we can keep negotiating about it. Or, most people are pretty good about this. Most people don't mind their work being edited. Now, we have had some circumstances where people have told us, if you're not going to print what I wrote, then I'd rather you not publish at all. And that's fine.
Right.
That's also fine. But that's pretty rare. And I really like to think of my role as editor as being in a collaboration with the writer or the person who has the article idea. And again, I can also interview you. If that is a better way for you to express yourself. We've published plenty of interviews in the monitor, and interviews are a perfectly legitimate form of journalism. And so we can do that too. So don't feel that just because you're not a writer, I'm going to put it out there and say, because we do use audio content and so forth. Send me a voice memo. If you really want to, I'm all for it. So
some folks are better speakers than writers, so they can put their thoughts out there in the oral words better than they can put it on paper. So
yeah,
I can see where that would work.
And see, I'm exactly the opposite. I feel much more comfortable writing, but to each their own, right?
Yes.
So different people have different strengths, and that's okay. We want to get it all in the monitor.
Absolutely. Now, I'm trying to think if I've seen it, and nothing's coming to mind, but I'm sure it has. If it's there, have you pulled content from other, publications, or is all the content member or a reader supplied?
So we have pulled content from other publications. Now, that can be a bit of a challenge. And it really depends on the originating publication's licensing rules. Some have very liberal licensing rules. They use, a Creative Commons license or whatever, and they say that you can freely republish their material. Others, they want a fee for republishing material. That tends to be the case with newspapers and other magazines.
Yeah.
If they are of any real size and they have their own circulation, they tend to be a little more particular. Not all of them, though. And so it really is a matter of investigating. I think the last thing that I two things that I can remember that we republished is we republished a piece from The Guardian. We had to pay them for it. They didn't charge us too much, an exorbitant amount of money, so it was worth doing. But it was slightly before I became full-time editor, but while I was still working with Gary, we published an article about another Gary O'Donoghue, who is a blind journalist with the BBC. And Gary O'Donoghue was featured in news coverage for a while because he interviewed one of the, he happened to be there, and he, as a blind journalist, interviewed one of the first reliable witnesses to the Trump assassination attempt that took place, the President Trump assassination attempt that took place in Pennsylvania. And so it was a fascinating story. And this was a story ultimately about not about just what happened, but about a blind journalist at the top of his game. And I mean, Gary literally reached out and touched a person's arm and said, "Can you tell me what you just saw?" When that event happened. And it turned out that the gentleman gave a very detailed and very reliable account that ultimately informed a lot of news coverage about that particular event. So it was just a really neat story. And so we did, I know Gary, but I figured I didn't need to interview him because somebody already had. And we were allowed to publish it. I also published an article about one of our leaders, Ismail Colazzo, Izzy, who is from South Dakota and is one of our new dynamic leaders. And he had a news story published about him going to Washington, D.C., to advocate against the closure of the Department of Education. And so we were able to, that particular news source had a liberal licensing policy. They didn't charge us anything, so I republished the article about Izzy, who's a great leader and one of our current members of the Kenneth Jernigan Leadership in Service program. So he's also a very good writer. I hope to publish some other stuff from him as well.
Oh,
So
that's
we do.
great.
Yeah, so we do occasionally do that. We do occasionally republish or reprint things when we can and when it isn't going to break the bank. And when we can get the permission.
Because I was saying, I don't know if we mentioned this or not, but it is free for everybody, the monitor. So all those different formats and everything, it is absolutely free. So the Federation does not make money on this. So I can see where you would not want to break the bank, because I imagine the bank's kind of little
I mean, we definitely budget for the monitor, and I will
Yes.
say that although it is free, we never want to charge anybody for it. But we do publish in each issue of the monitor, roughly how much a per person subscription would cost an
Okay.
individual. And so if individuals so desire, they can make donations
Right.
to the Federation in that
Absolutely.
amount.
Yep.
And we appreciate that because that's what allows us to do what we do. So.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, we are almost out of time here. I wanted to give you an opportunity. People know how to contact you, and it
I am. Hello, I am so sorry, everyone. I had some technical difficulties. Obviously, it dropped me off. So I do apologize. I know we only have a minute or so left. Chris,
So,
if you are, were you able to give your information on how people could contact you?
I did not yet, but I will really quickly. I'll make it really easy for this purpose, and maybe I'll send you more detailed information that you can repeat on your next show. But easiest way to get to me is send an email to communications@nfb.org. And make sure you put Braille Monitor in the subject line somewhere. So you can say Braille Monitor submission, Braille Monitor question, That way it'll get routed to me.
Absolutely.
So, and you can also call me at 410-659-9314. You can just ask for me, Chris Danielson. They'll, you know, press zero and ask the operator for me, and they'll get you connected with me.
Well, Chris, I thank you so much for coming on today. It has been very enlightening and very interesting, and I appreciate it so much. I remember, everybody, you can contact me at any time. You can find my information at our website, nfbohio.org, or more information about what Chris does in the National Federation of the Blind at nfb.org. I'm looking forward to talking to all of you next month. And remember, you can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back.